Grant and Danny welcoming you back on The Fan, brought to you every day by the law firm Condorian Murray.
Estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com. And be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
Let's go to the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. And welcome onto the show, Martin Ostermule. He is a D.C. reporter for Notice. And he had a lot of the details on the area down around the RFK 2.0 site where the Commanders are building their new stadium. We want to ask him about that site and what's going to be erected around that stadium. Martin, thanks so much for the time. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good, buddy. Thank you.
Very well. So I guess you could paint with a broad brush to get us started here. What can you tell us about the plans? We've known for many, many months this was not just going to be a stadium. What else are they thinking for right around where the Commanders will be playing their home games come 2030?
Well, I think the first thing to notice is that, like, come 2030, you're going to see the stadium. You'll see kind of a plaza in front of it, and you're going to see the parking decks built out. Everything else will still be undeveloped. There's going to be a lot of surface parking lots that remain for the first couple of years. But eventually, probably a couple of years down the line, the ideas are pretty ambitious. I mean, we're talking thousands of units of apartments and other types of housing, up to 6,000 of those. We're talking 1,200 hotel rooms. We're talking hundreds of thousands of square feet of retail and kind of entertainment and commercial offerings, and a lot of parkland. They're going to really use a lot of the site. A lot of the site has existing playing fields on there. A lot of it is along the Anacostia River, so they're going to keep that open to, for people to use. But it's going to be a really, really different place than it has been in the past.
So the thing that jumped out to me, the biggest, I had to reread the sentence like 15 times because I'm a bit of a rube here, Martin, but the football team is going to handle the development of the Plaza District and Riverfront District, D.C. What does that mean? Like, in other words, the football team's now in charge of building apartments and hotels and Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts and things like that? Like, help me understand that.
Yeah, basically. I mean, you got it right. So as part of the deal, the district wanted to get this done as quickly as possible. And their thinking was, if we hand over as much as of the land as possible to the team is then incentivized to get it done really quickly because they want more people there. They want the place to be a success, right? The district is a government. It has to deal with the usual government process, which can be slow. So basically, a lot of the residential development and entertainment development is going to be led by the team. They're going to take charge of it. There is one section that will be led by the district, but it's not one of the bigger parts of the land. So yeah, the team has, you know, a lot of power here. They have a lot of incentives to get this done and get it done more quickly than the city could because they want this place to be a destination.
Makes sense. And it also speaks to, I remember when Nats Park was built in 2008, and for a long time, and there were reasons for this, there was a recession back then, whatever else, but all of the plans that we'd heard so much about hadn't come to fruition.
There was a McDonald's and a car wash.
Right. There was nothing here for years. I don't know if you remember or were around for that or have thoughts on that, but it did hurt the Nationals. And yeah, the idea being, I guess, that the team wouldn't allow that to happen because what's good for them is also good for the city and they need people down there.
Right, exactly. And I was around for what was there down by Nats Park before Nats Park. And you're right, there wasn't a whole lot. And even to this day, you go to Navy Yard, it's completely transformed. The area around Nats Park is totally different. But there are still little plots that still haven't gotten done. And part of it's the economy, part of it's development patterns, and part of it is just it's slow when the government gets involved because they have to go through zoning and all these sorts of things. And the idea here was much more like, listen, we just want to offload this on someone else who's going to move it forward because we see this project as being one entire project, not a stadium and then a bunch of random things around it. They want the whole thing to be an experience that draws people in and keeps them there for longer than they would if they were just going to a normal NFL stadium.
This could be a bad question, but is any part of it strategic because of just all the red tape from a government standpoint with DC and the federal government and being at odds? And, you know, is federal government allowed to step in and be a fly in the ointment as they're trying to get things done? And if the Commanders are doing it, then there's no power over them. Is that a thing or no?
Well, the federal government could step in at any point. We know this because this remains federal land. The district has a long-term lease on it, but the feds have a lot of power. But yeah, I think the idea here was that the Commanders and the NFL are pretty powerful, pretty influential, and pretty well connected. So that if anything kind of gets stuck on the federal side, the Commanders would probably have as much, if not more, power to get it unstuck than the city government would. Because again, there you involve politics. I mean, city government is run by Democrats. The Republican administration in the White House has fought with the city, with the folks in the city. So I think the thinking was also, listen, we hand it off to the Commanders. They're well-connected. They know how to get this sort of stuff done. They can grease the skids where necessary and probably do it faster than we could.
Martin Ostermiel with us here on G&D, reporting on the new RFK 2.0 site. So the parking decks, parking garage things, that's source of consternation for, you know, sort of city folks that want to walk, scoot, metro, everywhere else. But for football goers, that's a concern in the different direction. They want 10 times the amount of parking there. But I understand kind of the push and pull. What can you tell us about those?
Yes, I mean, the current site at RFK, or what RFK used to be, had something like 12,000 to 15,000 spots, like super well-known for tailgating. Northwest Stadium out in Landover has something like 20,000 spots, great for tailgating. The new site, the new stadium at RFK, will not have nearly as much. They're thinking 8,000 tops, 6,000 of which are going to be in parking decks, and 2,000 are going to be first surface lots that will eventually get built up. But then those parking spots will get reincorporated elsewhere on the site. But basically, this has left fans with the question, like, well, where do we tailgate? I mean, there's not going to be surface parking lots that offer that kind of ample space to get that done. The team has floated the idea of using the tops of parking decks and having designated areas up there for tailgating, or also using this plaza district, which is this kind of big open space they're going to have in front of the stadium where that's going to welcome people to the stadium as a site for tailgating. But I think that's going to be, that's still going to be an issue that the team is going to have to work out with this fan base over the next few years.
Martin Ostermiel, who wrote the piece in Notice, you can go check it out. This is on the stadium site for the Commanders and what all is going to be built and by who over by the stadium. So sticking with the parking decks, you had an excerpt from what you were reading about these plans and the design. It sounds like one of the points of consternation is how they're actually going to look. I guess someone, and I don't know who it is, but they don't want it to look like parking garages because it's an eyesore, I guess, the rest of the year. So they're looking into maybe having like a unique architectural design. Like, what is the deal with that?
Yeah. So again, being that this is federal land and it's, if you, I mean, you know where the site is, it looks straight down East Capitol Street to the Capitol. So it's got really interesting kind of historic monumental views. And there was some concern that if you put these big parking decks, it's going to block some of the view sheds. And let's be honest, we might love parking, but we never like where we have to park, nor do we think it's great architecture. So the team and the city are basically coming up with this idea of, like, we know these are going to be big parking decks. There's no getting around it. But let's at least kind of design them in a way, or put some cladding on the outside, some sort of design on the outside that makes it look a little less like an like a parking deck, or at least a parking deck that's interesting. And they've done this, I think, down by Nats Park. One of the parking decks has some kind of murals along the side. It's that sort of thing. It's just kind of sprucing up a parking deck. Look, you're not going to convince someone it's the Leaning Tower of Pisa or like the Eiffel Tower, but you can make them think, oh, that's a pretty parking deck.
To that point, though, on Nats Park, I'm assuming these are going to be a lot bigger, and maybe that's the answer, but I've never once thought about garages B and C at Nats Park when I drive by. It's a ballpark. There are these very square parking garage-looking parking garages. There are only two of them. There's not a lot of parking at Nats Park. It's mostly people come in via Metro, or there is still some surface-level parking you can find in the neighborhood or whatever. Are these just so much bigger that it's a big deal? Like, I think it's furniture in the room. It's like a chair. Nobody notices those garages in the Navy Yard, I don't think.
Yeah, no, these are going to be big. I mean, these have to fit between 2,500 and 3,000 cars. They're something like 11 stories tall. They're going to be hard to miss.
How many? And I think, do we know how many of those stories are under, like, how tall would they be? Because the Nats, I guess, only goes up 4 or 5 levels from the ground. But I guess this could be as many as, what, 10 or 11, you're saying?
I think they're still trying to determine if any of it's going to be below grade. I mean, the thing is, that's ideal. It makes it much more expensive. So I think those plans have to be ironed out. But I think all the renderings have shown pretty big buildings, big parking decks regardless. And I think the difference between this and what you see at Nats Park is, number one, this just fits more people, so they have more flow of humanity coming, so they have to find ways to get them there. And second of all, it's right next to a residential neighborhood, so there's none of the kind of surface parking lots you could probably find down by Nats Park if you need to park other than the parking deck. So parking is going to be an interesting point of discussion for the next couple of years.
So you mentioned residential's right next to it, and it's certainly not going to be, they're not mostly in the style that they're talking about with the new residential here, Martin, right? It's a lot of row homes, places that have been there forever, and now you've got kind of the new, I don't have a better word for it, but sort of corporate style apartment buildings are going to go up with a whole bunch of units, et cetera. What's the neighborhood saying, and kind of what's the balance there to try to make it fit, but also maybe leading change into kind of revamping that neighborhood in the future?
So I think it's still early days. Like, I haven't yet started seeing people complain too much about the design because they're just barely starting to take a look at it. I think what's interesting is that they're not trying to make this look like what Navy Yard was, because Navy Yard was kind of ended up being a bit of a blank slate. Like, they knocked down a bunch of industrial buildings and they could put up these very modernist looking buildings instead. This being next to like an old historic residential neighborhood, I think they're going to want, and they've designed it to look already a little more like the neighborhood around it. It's going to be taller. They're going to be residential buildings, so it's going to look different than row houses, but they're going to use a lot of brick. They're going to make it look classical. And again, because it's a federal site and the feds have a say in this, they're going to want to be really sensitive about making it, you know, acceptable to federal officials who may have opinions about architecture. And we know that the current occupant of the White House definitely cares about architecture.
Martin Ostermuhl is with us on Grant and Danny. You had mentioned an excerpt or a takeaway from some of the literature on this was about grocery stores that are coming in and what that means for affordable housing and housing units. Was there a set percentage they have to hit of affordable housing as part of the plan? And what's the math look like there?
So it's between 6,000 and 6,500 units all told of housing. So it's like all the housing that they could probably fit on the site. And of that, 30% has to be affordable. Like, affordable is a squishy concept because
I was going to ask, what is the definition of affordable? Because that's changing probably all the time.
It's always changing. And the city itself has different kind of like bands of affordability from like 0 to 30%, 30 to 50% of like the area median income. So basically, they're going to have a mix here. They're going to say some of this housing is for people who are literally just like minimum wage workers. Some of the housing is going to be people who are first responders and teachers and make that sort of money. So it's going to be a mix. And again, 30% of, 6,000 units. I'm a journalist, not a mathematician, but like it'll be a good amount of units.
Tell me about Kingman Commons. So the park north, there's all sorts of stuff that's changed a lot since I was a kid, but there's soccer fields. There's the different parks. There's a farmer's market up north if you kind of go towards Oklahoma Avenue, Benning Road, et cetera. There's a lot of stuff they want to kind of keep and maintain there. How does kind of Kingman Commons fit into that?
So Kingman Commons is going to be kind of a residential area along Oklahoma Avenue next to Kingman Park, which is the existing neighborhood.
Yep.
And then just south of that, you'll get all the kind of recreation spaces. You have the fields that are there right now. There's a bunch of them. There's a playground and stuff for recreation. And they're going to keep all of that, and they're going to add an indoor kind of sportsplex, like an indoor sports facility that the city's going to build. So that entire side of the stadium, like the northeast corner of it,
yeah,
right, exactly, towards Benning Road, is going to be recreation and open space. So it's going to be kind of cool. I mean, like, for residents, that's a great benefit. But even for people who come to a game, I mean, if you come a couple hours early, you have a lot of places to explore and look around and enjoy.
So as someone following this as closely as you are, what do you like most about these plans? What do you think is going to be a slam dunk? And then where are you the most curious or nervous is probably the wrong word, but you go, I don't really see how this is going to work here. There's going to have to be more done.
I think the city and the team were really good about setting aside spaces for recreation and parks. Like, instead of saying we're going to take 180 acres and completely build over it, and that was somewhat of the criticism of Navy Yard, that it was very built over. And they've also thought about how to connect it to the Anacostia River, which they have done down in Navy Yard. So I think turning towards the river and using the parkland is a great idea. The only thing I would be concerned about, and I think people should be aware of, is the timing of all of this. Again, the stadium has to be done by 2030. It's going to, that is like, they will get that done before anything else. It's just how they phase in the rest of the development. Because the first couple of years of people going to the new stadium, they're going to look around and there's going to be a lot of old surface parking lots that have been there for decades. And there won't be a whole lot of residential or commercial stuff yet. So I think it'll be probably the mid-2030s when we're going to start seeing the real full transformation of the site. And that's if nothing gets in the way, and something always gets in the way. So we'll see how the timing works out.
The elephant in the room, though, isn't it still Metro?
It is still Metro. Yeah, I mean, the one station there is Stadium Armory. The city is going to pay $300 million to expand it. I mean, they can only expand it so much, but to just get more people in and out of it more quickly. But the next thing is, there was talk about building another Metro station, kind of the next one along the line on Oklahoma Avenue, but that's just not feasible because of cost and also the technical aspects of it. So instead, Metro has proposed building a rapid bus line from Union Station all the way down H and Benning to get to the stadium. Now, again, someone has to pay for that, and no one has determined who's going to pay for that yet, but the city is going to have to get on the planning for that one very soon.
Martin Ostermuhl on Grant and Danny. In the end, I think you could say that Muriel Bowser ended up being huge supporter of sports in D.C. in that she had to rescue the Caps Wizards thing after it was a fiasco, and you can make the case DC was involved in what happened there, but obviously getting the deal done with the Commanders as well. I know there's going to be a new mayor eventually, and I think Janice Lewis George just won a primary or something like that. I don't follow DC politics all that closely. I live in Virginia. I work in DC. But how could things change moving forward from a sports stadium standpoint with a new mayor who might be less of a sports fan?
It is true. She's less of a sports fan than Mayor Bowser is, but she was still committed to the deal. I mean, she did. She had some concerns about how the deal was structured on the front end of things, but then helped make some changes to it and then voted for it. So I think she recognizes she's been in D.C. long enough. She's a lifelong Washingtonian. I think she recognizes the value and the importance of the team to folks in D.C., and not just folks who've been here for 10 years, but folks who lived here for their entire lives. Like, there's a recognition there of the value of the team. And also the power it has of the team to kind of transform this entire site in one go. So I don't think she is going to be the sort of person to get in the way of that. And I think Mayor Bowser is probably going to do as much as possible before she leaves office to ensure that nothing can quickly be undone. So I think there's going to be some work being done this year to make sure that we get this set in stone and it's going to get finished on time. I think the most you could see is there could be concerns about the sorts of labor that's used to build these sites. Like, Janice Lewis George is very pro-union, so she's going to want to make sure that a lot of those jobs go to union workers, which happens a lot. But, you know, that could be a hang-up at some point, but I don't foresee anything else big.
Martin, you touched on it a moment ago, but if you wouldn't mind reminding our audience here, timetable for, you know, kind of next steps here, everything from the debate, the 11th hour strangeness, then at midnight it goes fine again, shovels in the ground, et cetera. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, what we're looking at now is kind of the dirty work of getting the site ready for construction, which is currently happening. If you have folks listening who have not been down to RFK in a couple of years, they should go just to witness how the old stadium is completely gone. It's basically a blank slate. It's just getting cleared off. And construction is, you know, I don't know when construction will actually happen. I think it's maybe later this year that it would be as soon as they could start. But yeah, construction is going to start moving on the stadium soon. And then, like I said, it has to open by 2030. That's the one thing they can't miss that deadline. There's a lot of other deadlines that they can be flexible with, but not the stadium opening.
Martin Ostermuehl is with us on Grant and Danny. Notice Reports is where you can follow the publication on social. DC Reporter. Last one, this is off the beaten path a little bit, but I just saw that you were writing about this today. So I'm just curious, as someone who buys a lot of tickets and on the secondary market routinely gets tickets to events in DC, what is going on with a bill that Charles Allen, who comes on our show a bunch, is trying to introduce? What is the deal with the StubHubs of the world and the future in DC?
Right. So that is a bill that he introduced that got a first vote in the council today. And basically what that would do is that would kind of rein in some of the secondary market sellers, like the ticket resellers, like the StubHubs of the world, and put more restrictions on how expensive the tickets can be when they're resold. He initially wanted a price cap, which is like he wanted a certain percentage above the value of the ticket was the most you could sell it for. That has changed a little bit, but there's still a lot of changes left to come. And most of this is actually just going to impact music venues. The sports facilities are not covered. And mostly because I talked to him about this, but he said that sports are different than music venues. I mean, lots of people who go to games are buying season tickets. You know, you don't buy season tickets to go see to the 9:30 club. There's no such thing, really. So it's just a different kind of marketplace and mechanism. So basically, if this bill passes the council, which it could happen in the next couple of weeks, it shouldn't have an impact on the sports side of things. It's more the music side.
It'd be great for consumers, though. How much of a precedent is there? I mean, is this a thing in a bunch of cities already?
I mean, Maryland has a law that touches on this, but doesn't impose a price cap. If DC went for a price cap, that would be pretty unique. Now, there's a lot of movement in the world of ticket selling generally. I mean, there was these lawsuits against Ticketmaster and Live Nation and kind of this back and forth over the role that they play in ticket prices. So, you know, again, DC is a pretty small player in the grand scheme of things. So even if they pass this law, we have to wait and see how it plays out and how the sellers respond.
Martin, great info, man. Appreciate it. Great reporting as well. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, outstanding. Martin Ostermuehl of Notice on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Speaking of stadiums, the Nats are playing at Fenway Park, a rare trip for them to Boston. You could see how important and how much fun the players were having yesterday to go out and see the Green Monster and sign their names inside like every player gets to when they play their first game there.
Yeah,
they were like little kids.
Yeah, Dave Jagler did the, you know, player interview they do for the pregame show. Usually it's, you know, down on the field for BP in the dugout or whatever, which is also pretty cool. But he and PJ Pullen were talking on right underneath the Green Monster on the warning track. And they both stopped like 15 different times in the interview just to tell you, how cool is this? You grew up an hour away from here. I grew up 45 minutes from here. I was a fan. So was I. Isn't this amazing? Like, they couldn't get over it, how cool it was.
I want to have a discussion about historical sports venues and the most impressive you've been to, the one that was maybe the most nostalgic or emotional when you got to go to it. And if you want to hop in on that, you can. 800-636-1067. We'll do that next on The Fan.